Distractions are good. That means conference room, 5 minutes. No, 5 seconds. Right now, conference room.
Oh, by the way, everybody, I'm really excited. We are going to give you a little teaser of our Trivia Night members only bonus episode at the end of this episode. So be sure to stick around. It will happen near or at the end. So listen to this whole episode and check it out, because you are not going to want to miss not only that teaser, but the whole doggone thing, because it's awesome. So don't forget, stick around. Goodbye.
Micah, where are the turtles? Where are they? What have you done with them?
I thought it was mine. I thought you gave me that basket so I could have the things inside of it.
No, you misunderstood me. I need that basket back. If you're not pledging your loyalty to me, then I'm just going to need that basket back.
You can have the basket. Here's the basket. You can have the basket.
But I also need the turtles. Where are the turtles?
I ate them, okay?
Were they delicious?
They were so delicious. They melted in my mouth, and you're just going to have to deal with it.
I don't even like chocolate turtles.
I don't like chocolate turtles either.
All right, we should get into this episode. This is season 4, episode 2, Dunder Mifflin Infinity, which originally aired October 4th, 2007. So I just need to say right off the beginning here, before we get into discussing the show, there was a website called Dunder Mifflin Infinity that had online games where fans could come and join the Dunder Mifflin branches and participate in various tasks to earn Shroot Bucks.
What the heck? Is it? I want to do that. Is there an app?
I know. No, it's not around anymore. It absolutely broke my heart that it wasn't there.
That's heartbreaking.
So it launched about the same time that this episode aired, and then throughout the seasons it was out, and yeah, it just breaks my heart that doesn't exist. I wish it were there. Online games, fans, virtual Dunder Mifflin branches. Oh my gosh.
I want to earn Shroot Bucks so I can get Stanley Nichols. It's like, it's just my life goal to have some Stanley Nichols.
I'm surprised someone hasn't made a online version of the Office game or some sort, something like this again, because I mean, we're all missing it. We all would love this. There's so many fans out there.
Somebody out there who's listening to this. We're on like tech podcasts and stuff like that, and we are sort of in this area. So I wouldn't be surprised if there are some listeners out there who are like app developers. And I'm just saying,
we can't pay you, but we can give you a Dundee.
I think you could run away with some magical excitement if you made some sort of The Office style game that was an app that we could get to play and also talk about on the show, because it would be so fun. So think about it.
I would grab all of my Fry cash and wave it in the air and tell them to take all of my money, because I would love this. I would totally pay monthly for it too.
Oh yeah, a subscription for sure.
All right, well, this episode is good. It's a good episode. I don't think it's a great episode.
The first few episodes of season 4 are longer episodes. And so folks, you know, who are, I think, new to The Office might be going, are they all now 40 minutes? And it is not the case. This is just one of them to kind of kick the season off. And yeah, I agree with you. There is some magic that happens in this episode that is magic that ranks among my most loved moments of The Office.
Oh, yes.
But the episode itself, I agree that it's not really all that grand as a whole.
It's a nice episode 2 of a season. It doesn't need to be much more than that. You know, we're continuing the story now with Jim and Pam being together and kind of The Office finding out more about that. I do like the way it gets revealed that Toby very hostily puts out a memo that reveals basically that Jim and Pam are together, and everyone is super caught off guard by it. And it's really fun how excited everybody is. I love how Kevin is all like, I told
yes,
you, I knew it. Just like we said, Kevin is us all, right? Like,
whoa, wow.
Tuna.
Awesome.
I knew it.
Tuna.
And Oscar even gives him some props too.
He does, because Kevin nudges him and he's like, huh? Huh? I was right. Yeah, I was right.
And Oscar, you know, has gotten accused before of, or maybe in the future gets accused of, like, basically never giving Kevin any credit for anything. And so this was kind of a cute moment where Oscar was actually like, yeah, you knew it. One of the things I love though is the way that, like, Toby, in a moment of exasperation and jealousy, sends out this email, and then he walks into the main part of the office. Michael comes in and starts to confront Toby, and Toby has this attitude where he's like, I did that without considering the repercussions, and now Michael is suddenly coming at him, and I love that.
Hey, Toby. What's this? Huh. I just want to remind everyone about the company rules involving PDA.
Yes, some people in the office have complained.
Oh, really?
About some other people engaging in PDA. And, you know, just want to remind it's not appropriate to do that.
And it's just kind of like, look what you rot, Toby. These are the seeds that you've sown, these seeds of discord. And now Michael is here to grim reap you, and you just have to put up with it. And it's kind of glorious. And then on top of that, he kind of has to double down when he realizes, he looks around and sees how excited everyone is for Pam and Jim. And it's just like, if I try to poo-poo on their rain on their parade, then I'm going to be seen as not a good person. And so he's just kind of like, yeah, Pam, this was totally my way of helping you announce it. Ha ha ha. And I think that it's glorious.
I love Michael's reaction. He is so genuinely happy for them.
No. Pam, let him ring. Let the bells of Dunder Mifflin chime out your love. Because this is really good. This is really good. My heart soars with the eagle's nest.
I love the grandiose expressions that Michael brings to this momentous occasion as the phones ring out in joy for Jim and Pam's union of dating.
It's not even just it's not even just you and I. I noticed that is a common thing that our listeners will often tweet at us or will mention in reviews for the podcast or things like that.
Yes.
My heart soars with the eagle's nest seems to be a common quote among office watchers and fans.
I love the confessionals that we get right after the reveal of Jim and Pam being together and how everyone's reactions are. Kevin's all excited and Angela's her typical Angela. I always love those little quick, quippy reaction shots that we get in this show. It just adds to the humor and it makes me laugh every time.
Jim Halpert's off the market. Guess who just became the best looking single guy in the office?
This episode also has, I think, some revelations for, again, less prominent characters where we get more moments among them. So one character that, you know, we've seen sort of in the background who plays a more centralized role in this is Kelly. And I would say Ryan sort of fits in that as well. We're starting to see a setup of how it's Ryan versus Michael in this episode. And it's setting up how that affects Michael with Ryan at corporate. But there's also some more flavor added to the character of Kelly, where Kelly will clearly do anything it takes without remorse to get the things that she wants. And it starts out with her just sort of dressing up and pretending like she doesn't know Ryan's gonna be there.
I love that dress. That dress is insane.
It's so bright. So it's just like, oh,
it's like Betty Boop.
And the makeup too is over the top.
It's so bad because we've seen her be much more put together.
Yes.
Than this.
She's peacocking.
Oh, she's so peacocking. It's crazy.
I mean, it's kind of literally peacock colors, frankly.
I do love how she just strides in with her pursed lips.
Oh, is Ryan coming back today?
Yeah, he is.
Huh.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, Ryan here today.
Yeah, I like Kelly in this episode a lot. I like what we see her doing. And I think that the character that she has been building, it's drastically changed for Kelly from the beginning of the season. She was much more demure, kind of in the background.
Yeah.
She was wearing clothes that just weren't flashy. They were very plain. And it totally changed around.
There's so much more dynamism to this character.
Yeah.
And it's appreciated that we have that. And while we have everyone celebrating the union of Pam and Jim, who have been dating for a while, we have Dwight and Angela essentially breaking down in front of us.
Oh, so
I
bad.
Mean, Angela even stands up to say, I've never dated anyone in the office at all. The camera zooms in on Dwight and we see how
he's so crushed.
Yes. And his eyes, you know, the makeup crew deserves some props over the course of the beginning of this season, as we see the effect that it has on him. And it's quite literally like a physical effect that it has on him. So do pay attention to that if, you know, this is your first time watching or if you hadn't noticed it before. I mean, we see the physical manifestation of Dwight's heartbreak and how it weighs on him.
So how do you feel about the security footage angle? I feel like this is very new when we see Dwight presenting Angela with garbage.
What is that?
It's a feral barn cat.
And then she rejects garbage.
I don't want garbage. I want sprinkles.
And then Dwight deposits garbage into Vance's refrigeration. That whole scene, it's a mix between cameras kind of looking through, I guess, another office or something like that and catching them. And then this black and white security footage, which is very different for them.
Yeah.
And normally I would never have noticed it, but now that I'm being hypercritical of all of these little pieces to the show, I felt like it was a little out of place.
So I'm trying to think if in 2007, would Big Brother have been in its heyday, in its prime?
No, I think that's past its prime.
Past its prime?
I think so.
So I was trying to think of like those shows where you sort of tune in on people. And so it made sense in that aspect of sort of...
Oh, like maybe it was kind of an echo of that, yeah, like trying it out.
Yeah, just sort of that, but more the sense that if you're already kind of watching shows that have this at the time, then this is going to feel comfortable to you. So it won't feel like out of place. But for me, you know, when we're so used to that, this standard kind of interview style, that does feel strange. And it's a way to really drill in on the fact that at these moments, Dwight and Angela feel like they're being sneaky and feel like maybe they're not being watched. And
yes.
So they genuinely feel like they're apart from everyone. And this is how we show, like, they don't even have the opportunity of acting how people act in front of the camera because they don't think that anyone's there.
That is such a good point. Yes.
So I think maybe that's what it is. And, you know, we have some more moments that are like that going forward. And this is kind of a first little look at that new angle on things for sure.
I do want to talk about Ryan's entrance, even though we already established that he's in the episode and that he's a big part of the episode. When he comes in with that BlackBerry and that long silence.
Ugh.
Hey, Ryan.
Hold on one second. Hey, Pam, it's great to see you.
They really let you simmer in that, and I really appreciate it. It makes it so awkward. Pam's eye contact, just Ryan just typing, the camera going back and forth. It's a really, really great moment establishing attitude and the demeanor that Ryan has taken it upon himself to become the aura of.
Yeah, how much of a tool he is, essentially. He's too important for everyone now, and he's really letting it go to his head. That he has this job and works in New York and is too important for everybody here. And we get that immediately.
It's like that big head New York City syndrome. It's the people who have always kind of inflated and fantasized about what New York City is and what business is and being successful and powerful and all of those adjectives. And it's they've just bottled it all up into this like horribly putrid cologne of smugness, and it is, and Ryan is wearing it top to bottom. But to Ryan, this is what success looks like in his brain. So he needs to put on all of these airs of success in order to feel like the big man on campus and have the authority as he walks into this office in what he sees as a little small town. And we see that when he has his rivalry with Michael right away. And I gotta say, Ryan does manage to take control. I mean, Michael's very difficult to manage, and Ryan does, in his way, kind of shut down Michael's foolishness right away, or, you know, after a little bit. So I do appreciate that, but I still don't like Ryan.
Yeah, I think my favorite part about the way that Ryan is being is not Ryan, but how everybody either is not taking him seriously, just utterly and completely, and they sort of think it's cute, like, oh, look at him. He thinks he's so, that's kind of how Michael's treating it. But Pam and Jim sort of just are like almost pitying him because he, it's just like Pam kind of has this smirk on her face as he's doing what he's doing and is just kind of like, do you see how he's being rude and he thinks that's okay because he's some big important guy now? And Jim is just completely like, you like that kind of thing? I don't understand.
Oh, especially when the two guys are fawning over him in the kitchen, right? Like they are just drooling over his lifestyle, well, or at least the lifestyle he's pretending to have. And it is. It's one of those things. It's like, wow, this is what you're into, huh? And Jim questions that. And I think that we see really how down to earth Jim is in this situation, that he is not valuing the things that Ryan is and some of the other guys are actually valuing.
Jim, how awesome is Ryan now?
Yeah, he's definitely something.
Sorry, Tuna, but if you don't know why that's awesome, then you need awesome lessons.
And it gives me so much energy, to be honest. I'm like, yes, this sort of don't let someone be a tool. If he would walk in and just like do his job instead of trying to force everyone to respect him with his smugness, then he'd get so much farther. Well, probably not because this is The Office, but the way that he handles things, it makes me, what is that? When you celebrate someone's failure, that's got a name. It's a German name.
Schadenfreude.
Thank you. Yes. The Schadenfreude I experienced during this is wunderbar. very, very great. And so then we, like you said, Michael kind of gets shut down. And once again, we have Michael having a moment where he has been embarrassed in front of the cameras and mm-hmm. he has to work out a way to rewrite that story so he doesn't come out looking bad. This is one of my favorite moments because it's just so funny to me that he extrapolates a whole story from a twinkle in his eye.
Yeah, Ryan snapped at me, but there was this twinkle in his eye that I picked up on, which said, dude, we're friends. I'm doing this for appearances. I am the big boss now, and I have to seem like an ogre. But you know me, and you trust me, and we like each other. And we'll always be friends. And I would never take you for granted in a million years. And I miss you, man, and I love you. His words.
And then at the end, he's like, in his own words, or those are his words. And I love that so much because Michael can convince himself of anything. And yes, while that is not a good thing to be able to do, it's, I don't know if you've ever had anyone in your life who lies to themselves and lies to other people, but I have
yes.
growing up, I had a friend at the time who would do that so much. And there was something about watching her that was very just incredible to see the ability to invent an entire mm-hmm. story and convince themselves of it and convince others of that. And watching Michael do that in the same way, all from a alleged twinkle in his eye, it's kind of again, incredible to watch.
Can we talk about the conference room meetings in this episode? There are so many. Like, they're always in the conference room, I feel like. Maybe it was only twice, but it does feel like that they're in there back and forth pretty often.
It does feel like it's kind of a back and forth for sure. I like the Michael versus Ryan attitude of this episode, where there's the part where Michael literally says, like, this is still my office, Ryan, and makes him sit down, where the two of them are kind of going at it. And there's some major power play going on here. And that conference room, essentially having everyone's attention, is a big factor in the power that they feel they have or don't have.
The first meeting is essentially run by Ryan and introducing some Blackberries to the crew. And then I think the second one is the ageism meeting, where Michael reuses his posters, which I love that touch.
Why do you have the big picture up again? You used that already when you burned your foot.
We're using the Ben Kingsley, too.
I was going to put up some new pictures, but all of the ink in the printer was gone.
I like how Creed rails against the technology and the choices he makes in this episode. We don't see Creed being very active. He's more of usually a kind of skulking character in the background doing funny things or having, you know, the one-off great confessional. But this one, he's much more active because he does not want to lose his job, and he's warning Michael, and he's putting printer ink in his hair and acting like he's 30. I like this whole thread with Creed in it. It doesn't continue on through the second half of the episode as much, but I really enjoy its prominence in the first half.
So one of the things that I wrote down in my notes, and one of the things that we've talked about before is, you know, some of us have watched the show a billion times and have seen every episode many, 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 many times, and we always still find new things. And up to this point, I did not pick up on the camera zoom to Creed when Michael complains about the printer being out of ink. And so this whole time,
why you couldn't print out new pictures.
Yeah, this whole time I thought that Creed had just dyed his hair black, just sort of separately to try and make himself look younger. I didn't realize that he used toner to do this, to make his hair black. And so as I'm watching, I see that zoom happen and I was like, are you kidding me? I just now got that Creed used the ink to dye his hair. And so I had to write that down as like a moment where still to this day, I will pick up on new jokes, new funny bits, new things that happen. And that's one of the things that I feel a lot of people sort of cite about The Office that they enjoy and why it's so rewatchable.
There's so many little things in this beginning part of the episode, too. I really like the Pam and Jim discussion about Dwight and Angela.
Oh, my God, this is going to make your brain explode. Dwight and Angela dating. Have been. For 6 months.
No.
Swear to God. Oh, this is great. I was actually going to wait and tell you on your birthday, but this is much more fun.
No, they have been dating for like 2 years. Since before your barbecue.
Wait. What? You knew. You didn't say anything?
You didn't say anything to me.
Fair enough. Wow. We should have started dating like a long time ago.
I love how that reveal happens and their witty conversation back and forth about it. It's so heartwarming. And then of course Phyllis comes in and wrecks it all and awkwardly asks where their hands are. It's really, really good. And why, Micah, why does everyone in the office think that Pam is super promiscuous?
I don't get it. I mean,
is it because she had a fiance and then she, you know, had a few dates and now she's with Jim? Like, obviously, she is not promiscuous. That's the whole joke. But it's so funny. Like, where did that come from?
Because I wonder if it might be the fact that when you look at The Office and you look at the different characters, you know, Michael and other folks kind of say that Pam gets a lot of the attention as being good looking.
Mm-hmm. Right. She's like the pretty receptionist.
Yes, she's the pretty receptionist. And so I think there's that kind of sexism there that plays a role in just because Pam is gorge, that plays a role in why everyone sees her as that. But one of the things, you know, you noted about Phyllis coming in, I liked that moment. I wrote down, it's kind of like, it is another example of Phyllis's little feisty side coming out that she has underneath everything, because she is basically telling Pam, you can't just assign the people to whoever you want. And for Phyllis to even be thinking like that, we know that she's kind of got a feisty side, which I like.
But when a new client calls, you just have to randomly assign them to a salesperson. You can't base who gets new clients on who you're sleeping with that week. Okay? Okay.
Oh, yeah. You could see the competitive business side of her and why she is a good salesperson, because she is out there fighting for those sales like everyone else. She might be quiet and knitting and Mother Goose-like, but you know, she is out there. She is a savvy business lady, too. We saw it before when she did the sales call and knew exactly how to play that one client like a fiddle.
So I want to ask you something about, so Jan comes into the office and her and Ryan kind of have a little bit of a showdown. And Jan, I think, totally takes the win there. Mm-hmm. The way that she's dismissive of him at the end is just an excellent win. But when Jan is in the office with Michael and they're eating their food, on the table, there is a mason jar.
Yes, I know where you're going.
And it says, Great Scott. And
it does.
What is it? Is it dressing? Is it like salad dressing? What is it?
It looks like salad dressing. I think it's Great Scott salad dressing. I wrote that down.
Yes. And I'm like, what is that? How is this the first time I saw that? B, what is it? C, is it ever referenced again?
No.
D, is it a playoff of Ryan later making like sauces and things like that? Or is it a playoff of Serenity by Jan?
But his production company is also Great Scott.
Yeah, exactly. But so I'm thinking, like, Michael is at home. He sees Jan making these candles, decides he wants to make his own product. And so decides that his product is going to be salad dressing and then just reuses a logo he already made and makes Great Scott salad dressing. Like, I need to know the lore of the salad dressing.
It's so random. And I noticed it for the first time too. And it's has nothing about it on the Dunderpedia site. Like, they don't even mention it at all. So I was like, I'm so glad that I caught that, because they talk all about on these various fan websites and things that we glance at before we do these episodes. They'll talk about, like, what's written on the whiteboard and, oh, this continuity error over here was like this one tiny thing. Someone was listed as having a meeting and they don't work at the office anymore. Like, all these little tiny things. And then to leave out something as giant as Great Scott salad dressing. I mean, come on.
What is it? I want to know more.
I want to know more too.
Great Scott.
We're talking about Michael. We get a nice little glimpse into his childhood again. We have two instances that he reveals about his fake brother stealing his jeans and everyone telling him that he can't do things. And that included repeating the second grade and then eventually succeeding and getting past second grade as the largest kid. And I could just imagine how kind of traumatic all of that is. And it obviously is, because his character is bringing it up in these situations and using them as comparison footholds to these situations he's in right now. But it is so great getting all of these, why is Michael the way he is, indications from him, just his one-off comments about his childhood.
There's mistrust, there's trauma, there's abandonment, there's all sorts of things.
It seems like a little neglect. Like, why didn't they buy the poor kid
jeans?
Yeah,
why did he have to wear, like, shorts during the winter? Come on.
Yeah, get him some new jeans, or get the fake brother new jeans, and then, you know, it's just...
But Jan kind of jumps off, I think, of the little back and forth that she had to whisper... I don't know if you've ever seen Lord of the Rings, but
yep.
Jan has a very Grima Wormtongue moment where she whispers into Michael's ear and says, ageism. And suddenly Michael takes that and, like the dog after the bone, runs with it. And his little comments about, so older people have just as many rights as younger people, is kind of great.
New ideas are fine, but they are also illegal. Because they are a form of ageism.
Michael is an agent of chaos, but he's not an active agent of chaos. And so Jan almost sows the seeds of discord, and Michael is the weapon by which she does so. Suddenly, we've got a lawsuit on Dunder Mifflin's hands, potentially, and Michael is taking it to the, you know, the extreme. And suddenly, it's not just that you can't discriminate against people over a certain age, but it's that new ideas are illegal. And he takes it and just goes all the way with it, which I appreciate, because it shows the power that Michael's out of control mind can have in these sorts of things. And also, I appreciate how Ryan picks up on what's about to happen whenever he walks into the room and sees those posters on the wall. It's great too. He's like, oh no.
I like seeing Jan and Michael's relationship.
Yeah.
I like that they're kind of having lunch together in his office. You know, like, it's just, it's kind of nice that she brought lunch and she's hanging out with him. Yeah. It's not just like, she is at home. I mean, we find out later more of what their home life is about, but it was kind of warm.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, that we see her being active as a real girlfriend in his life. So should we talk about Dwight and Michael's quest?
Well, we should mention that Dwight and Angela go out to dinner. I mean, this is kind of what sets Dwight on the quest, because there's a parallel between Michael trying to reclaim business and Dwight understanding and working through his emotions about not being able to reclaim Angela. So Michael can't get his clients back, and sort of starts to realize that it's all futile. And I think at the same time is Dwight also understanding that it is futile to try to reclaim Angela or win her back, because she's not interested in him anymore because of what happens. When you look into a person's eyes and all you can see is your dead animal, I understand why you'd not want to be with that person anymore.
Yeah, their date is so awkward.
Ugh.
And it goes horribly, because it was nice that Angela actually kind of tried, and it goes very, very poorly.
Are you enjoying your mineral water?
I can't do this. I can't be with you. Every time I look in your eyes, I see Sprinkle's stiff, lifeless body.
Then don't look in my eyes.
I love the quest part of this episode. I forget that the Dunder Mifflin Infinity is connected essentially to the gift basket episode. In my brain canon, they are separate, but here they are together. And what I like about this second half of the episode, there's a lot of little things that go on, but my favorite is the Jim and Pam high five from across the room.
Oh yeah, that's a great gif in and of itself.
The Jim and Pam like across the room high five is just so great. It's such a wonderful, beautiful, iconic moment of their relationship, and it is the Jim and Pam gif. Like, that's what you think of when you think of Jim and Pam. You strangely picture them sitting separately, but yet being able to communicate through a distance like that and instantaneously and so in sync. It is just absolutely heartwarming, and I freaking love it.
Quintessential PB&J.
Oh, you nailed it. That's it. I could just delete everything I just said and just drop that in.
No, no. So, yes, I love that moment too. And it is time for the quest to take place. We've got, again, it's Michael versus Ryan. It's old school versus new school. Ryan thinks that his Blackberries and website are what's going to make business better, and Michael thinks that it's the old school, as he calls it, class, essence of class and fanciness that's going to win new business by reclaiming old business.
In the last year, we have lost 7 clients to the big chains. These gift baskets are a ticket back into their lives. We are going to show up at these businesses unannounced, and we are going to win them back.
With gift baskets.
With peanut brittle. With macadamia nut cookies. With chocolate turtles. With raspberry jam. And a little bit of fat and salt. Because you know what? That's what people like.
Interesting how he thinks that that's going to work. When I think about Michael and the way that he thinks, I don't know where this comes from, really, because I don't think of gift baskets as like a sales technique. When someone gets a new job, or when someone has a baby, or when someone's in the hospital or something like that, that's where I think of gift baskets. And so to me, this more would have been the cold call stuff that Michael does, what is it? I think earlier on, where they all are in teams and split up and go out places. That to me seems more akin to like Michael using old school sales tactics, or going to a golf course or something. That seems old school sales tactics-y. So I was kind of, I mean, I like the gift basket thing, because otherwise we would have not gotten the brilliant, where are the turtles moment? But it just kind of seemed odd to me. I don't know. How do you feel about that? Did you think about it?
I feel like it's misplaced politeness. It's like the idea that someone's like, you never show up to a party empty. Like Michael bringing the potato salad. Like, this is his mental way of he was taught like these are the nice, polite things to do in a social situation, no matter what. And so he doesn't think any further beyond I need to do this thing or why am I doing this thing or would this thing be appreciated, right? Like, obviously, at the cocktail party, it was catered. Why would you bring potato salad to a night event? Like, there's so many different things, but he brings the potato salad anyway. It's a nice gesture, but it's so misplaced. And I think that the gift baskets are a similar situation for Michael, where a gift basket, yes, it's a nice gesture. It's a thoughtful thing. It's salt and fat, and everyone loves it, right? Like, it's, but yet it is not in its right place. It doesn't really belong in trying to win back people with a sales pitch. And I gotta say, like, Michael has, throughout this quest, tries his absolute best. He is very good at his job during these sales calls, I guess you would call them. I don't know, winning back sales calls. But he just works it. Like, he knows that guy's daughter so well, and he knows.
Oh my God, knowing about her almond allergy.
Yeah, like remembering all of this kind of stuff that had come up in relationships past. And he is just playing every single negotiation card that he could think of, and then reveals this awkward gift basket, which kind of puts a damper on things because it actually does make it more awkward. And what I really like is that in the very last call, he's like spent all the cards he possibly can. He's gone through his whole Rolodex of things and said whatever he needed to say. But yet, and then he tries to pitch it with the website because he is actually a very good salesman, and he wouldn't let that go if this is a card he could play.
Yeah.
And he tries to play it.
Look, we're also coming out with a website soon. It's a state-of-the-art thing. It'll be up and running. It's going to cut costs, and it will make ordering much, much easier.
Oh, okay. Well, when it's up, I'll check it out, and if it really cuts costs, maybe we'll come back.
Great. The magic of the gift basket.
That I don't care about as much. Let me know when the site's up.
Okay. Good.
I think it upsets him that that is what works and it's not his tactic. And that's why he ends up having kind of his tantrum. His actual tantrum. But he did try it. And I have to say that that is a testament to the salesman that he is.
I like that. I like that outlook on things, because for the most part, all of this is just so, ugh, you know what I mean? You get that moment of awkwardness for him. And when you think about it, thank God that Dwight and Michael are doing that with some former client, and that it's not Dwight doing that with Angela, going that far and like throwing that tantrum to try to get Angela back, because that's even more cringy and awful. And it's just, if we're going to push that energy out somewhere, I'm glad it's being pushed out like away from the office with these people they'll probably never see again. It happens there, and then they can come back and handle things separately. It's good that that's what's happening, but it's almost, there's a lot of comedy, I think, in the fact that it happens in a professional capacity instead of the personal capacity.
Michael panics when he thinks he's not important, or he wants to be liked and seen as important. And it definitely was like the most childish fit of embarrassing acts that he could have thought to do in that moment. But I'm so glad he drove his car into Lake Scranton, because that part of the episode is my favorite part, especially when he comes back to the office and he exclaims,
I drove my car into a lake.
I love that they beep out his curse, because he is so,
he's so mad.
It's so good that it's in there. And
I have to say, that's what she said.
Oh, gross. No, I love when shows use swearing like that.
So sparingly
and so strategically that it makes it extra funny and perfect.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. There's, if you're going to have those beeps, let them be, you know, genuine. I mean, because I laughed out loud at that when that happens.
Me too.
And I see it every time, but I still laugh out loud at it. In 2017, when Twitter started allowing 280 character tweets, the first 280 character tweet I ever tweeted was the following. Everyone always wants new things. Everybody likes new inventions, new technology. People will never be replaced by machines. In the end, life and business are about human connections, and computers are about trying to murder you in a lake. And to me, the choice is easy. I love that quote so much, more than almost anything, so much so that my former boss, he was
tattooed it onto your back.
I wish. He's still a news reporter, and he saw a story about a person who accidentally drove their car into a lake. And like, he remembered me saying that quote or bringing up that quote. Then he like sent me the link and was like, it finally happened, Micah. And I'm like, oh my God, it's real. This is so great. Computers are about trying to murder you in a lake.
It's really true. I love how it connects the idea of technology that Ryan brought up in the very beginning of this very long episode, and yet connects it back so hilariously in the end to Michael fighting with his GPS and Jim's little quip about when Michael's asking, where did it get me? And Jim says, in a lake.
Exactly.
This is one of those moments that really stick around in my head that this happened to Michael.
Oh yeah, and shout out to a friend of the show, Dan, who at the time I tweeted that in 2017 replied, my wife and I still shout, Michael, it's a lake, when following GPS directions.
Oh, I'm so jealous of people's cleverness. Now I want to start doing that.
Yes, you must. When Siri is like, and turn left here. Marco, there's a lake there.
Oh, so good. Well, one last thing to put in before we give out our Dundee. I do want to mention the whole Ryan asking out Pam when he uses kind of the bait that he gives her of wanting her to make the Dunder Mifflin Infinity logo. And then that encourages the, you know, distance high five, which we love. And then at the end, it connects it back to Ryan, or the guys fawning over Ryan and saying that, oh, he can get any girl he wants. And then Pam shooting him down when he asks her out because she's with Jim. And I love Jim saying,
I guess he can't get any girl he wants.
It's so sweet. I gotta put in all my Jim and Pam love. I'm sorry. That's what I'm here for.
I thought of you whenever he said that, and I was like, I know Tiff loved this moment. Like I knew you loved that moment. And so I had like a little smile because I'm like, I'm sure that whenever that moment came up, she was like, yes.
Yes. I'm such a fangirl for Jim and Pam.
And it's cute. Can't get, and then that big smile that he has, that goofy like grin about it, is really sweet.
Yeah, this beginning part of their relationship is really, really great. Mm-hmm. This is just such a fun, neat little time.
A payoff too.
Exactly. It's the payoff from like these first three seasons of anticipation about them.
Anticipation.
What? Did I say it wrong?
No, you said it right. Have you not heard that? You say antissa, and then you wait, and then you say patient.
No.
It's like you're anticipating that. I think it's from something. Oh, yeah. It's from Rocky Horror Picture Show. I knew it.
Oh, yes. I know exactly what you're talking about now.
Makes me shiver with antissa. Patient. Anyway, you are probably all anticipating the Dundee this week.
Oh, great. Now you did that transition, and I had to keep everything in. You're so sneaky.
I love how Tiff's like, and we're going to remove Micah saying this, and we're going to get rid of him talking about his dog, and we're going to
I'm getting lazy. It's okay.
Well, actually, you're just going to have to anticipate the Dundee a little bit more, because I have to tell y'all, Tiff worked very, very, very hard. If you follow her on Instagram, then you saw some of this. I got even more of a sneak peek of the time that it took her to edit together the Trivia Night episode. A lot of work went into it. A lot of love went into it. And a lot of shroot bucks went into it. And it turned out incredible. And we want to give you all a little clip, a little highlight, a little taste, if you will, of our...
Like a good drug dealer.
Like any good basil and mozzarella and pesto dealer would. We want to give you a little taste of that Trivia Night episode. So Tiff, let that clip roll.
All right. Accounting. Here comes your question. Michael told Ryan's business class, there are really only four kinds of business. Tell me five of them.
All right. It's like he starts off like logically, right? And I think he starts with like sales, and then it's like hospitals is one of them, I think.
We can name some candy bars if that would help.
I think Babe Ruth is one of them.
Isn't there like a transport one?
We'll go with that. Sales, transport, hospitals.
Don't know if it's just transport or if it's a specific type of transport.
We'll go with transport for now. Now you see, because now I'm going to like logic. I'm like,
that's not your friend here.
Exactly. That's not going to help me. Paper.
Nice. Catering?
Yeah, let's go with that. We're going to go final answer, sales, transport, hospitals, paper, catering.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect.
Okay, what do you got?
There are four kinds of business.
Tourism.
Tourism.
Food service.
Food service.
Railroads.
Railroads.
Sales.
And sales.
Hospitals/manufacturing.
And hospitals/manufacturing.
And air travel.
And air travel.
There are actually six.
You know,
I only asked for five.
It wasn't that bad, right? Like, I feel like we were in the ballpark of a few of them.
We were. That could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, you did a good job. You did a good job, guys.
That could have been
one
way
of my
worse.
Favorite questions.
Thank you.
We weren't embarrassed, at least, coming out of this one.
We're not embarrassed.
And now it's time for the Dundee. We are excited this week. Once again, we love our listeners interacting with us on Twitter, sharing fun things, and also kind of like responding to the shows that we do and kind of following up with us, you know, oh, I heard you talking about this in the episode, and here are my thoughts on this. So always feel free to follow us over on Twitter @tall_beats and send us tweets when you have them about the show. But this week's Dundee, the Michael Scott's Dunder Mifflin Scranton Meredith Palmer Memorial Celebrity Rabies Awareness Pro-Am Fun Run Race for the Cure Award goes to Michelle D, that's @GameCockMitch on Twitter, for her ongoing support of the rabid. After listening to our last episode, Michelle tweeted at us to share her support the rabid rubber bracelet. And right after that, Tiff responded to show that she also had her support the rabid bracelet on.
Of course.
And that was wonderful. We all are supporting the rabid, but Michelle D, we appreciate you sharing.
She did it first.
You did it
first. She supported first.
And you shared that support with us, and we appreciate you supporting us with fun moments like that. So get on up here and accept your Dundee.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. And be sure to go follow us over at @tall_beats and interact with us as much as possible, because we love the attention, just like Michael. And we give out Dundees for that attention. And make sure you go over to The Incomparable, where you could go become a member and listen to our awesome trivia episode.
It's so good.
That has already made dozens of people sign up. And and they are enjoying that wonderful bonus members only stuff over there at The Incomparable. And it's not just our show, it's all shows that you get access to. But I gotta say, if you're here listening to this, you want in on this trivia night. It's quite the Mr. Holland's opus, I must say, to toot my own horn.
Yeah, and I'm over here tooting that horn too, so don't worry about it.
So go over, subscribe, have a listen to our members episode, and come back next week and join us when we talk about lunch party.
It's supposed to say launch party, Tiff.
I mistyped it.
The poll is live. The votes are coming in.
I like seeing the poll.
Me too.
That's what she said.
I was waiting for someone to say it.
Yep.
Oh, dear.
Perfect.
We need to start keeping a tally of this. That's what she said.
Yeah. Woo, buddy.